Well, well, well. There's a bit of news that I don't think anyone was expecting. Welcome to the emergency pod. It's been a long time since we've done the emergency pod. Can't actually remember the last emergency pod. Anyway, my name's Julian Roberts. I'm delighted, I guess, to be joined by Matt Caspel. How are you feeling?
You know, mate, these emergency pods mess me up. I had to run across the room, get the little hammer out, smash the glass, get the microphone
get
out.
I'm
all discombobulated, mate. Yeah, I don't really know what's going on.
I was pacing around the living room about an hour ago, Cass, when I just rang you, just because I had to speak to someone.
Talk to someone, and you chose me. You could have called anyone. You
were like, well, I knew the others would be at work, so.
Well, yeah. can't all doss around in the middle of the day, can we?
Another man dossing around in the middle of the day is Jack Spindlehurst. How are you getting on?
Well, you know, you either die a hero or live long enough to become a villain. And
which one are you?
Yeah, I'm both. Depends who you talk to.
Boys, I mean, obviously, you know, it's only been a couple of hours since the news came out. We've had a lot of questions from everyone, which we'll get through in a second. I suppose let's just start with how you're both feeling. Swindle, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I mean, it's
should we quickly say Mark Bonner's been sacked?
Make
that
do you
clear.
Think for anyone that will actually be, they just see this pod come out, they're like, hey, that's how they get their news about football, is it all through this pod? God help them if so.
Terrible. Mark Bonner's been sacked. Should we just read a bit of the statement just to give someone from Paul Barry? I want to start by simply saying this. Mark Bonner will rightly go down as one of the most important people in the history of Cambridge United Football Club. All of us, owners, board, staff, players and fans, know how lucky we've been to have him and how hard this decision has been. Cambridge United has made huge strides on and off the pitch over the last 5 years, and Mark has been instrumental in building our strong foundations for the future, creating special memories and moments for us along the way. Swindle, how do you feel?
It's such a weird one. You know, there's been conversations about it last season. There's been conversations about it this season. And, you know, when it happens, you almost feel shell-shocked. You know, it's a really tough one to take. And we've got so many good memories. It hasn't gone well this season, and it hasn't gone well in the last few games. And I think, you know, there's few people who can argue that this has been an absolutely stinking run. And, you know, a change of personnel last night, and it looked maybe even worse rather than, you know, any better. So I think, you know, he may have lost the dressing room, but you can't argue with the impact that he's had. And I think really, you know, hopefully he's inducted into the Hall of Fame, you know, before too long. It's a fantastic legacy that he'll have, and a great thing to have got the promotion, you know, the survival. We've got those games, you know, think about St. James's Park, think about being posh at the Abbey. You know, there's incredible things that have happened in his time here. It's always a shame to see someone, you know, especially after signing a contract, go, but it happens quite commonly in football. You see that, you know, long contract signed, and then it all goes tits up, and, you know, they're left with little choice. But sad to see him gone, but, you know, he'll be fondly remembered, and hopefully not the last we see of him in the club.
Yeah, I think that's probably a question for the future about what sort of role he maybe would end up playing and whether he'd want that or whether we'd want that. But I think that's maybe a separate question at the moment. I think it was 78 days since signing the contract that he's just been sacked. It says a lot about modern football, but I'll tell you what else I think it says a bit about Caspel is I don't think this was in the board's plan. I think that's fair enough to say. You said the other day that he deserved to stay just through his loyalty and that loyalty that we'd shown to him as well last season. Thoughts now?
I said that at 8 o'clock this morning, mate.
You did say that at 8 o'clock this morning.
I think I'm with Swindle. I'm completely, I was just completely shocked. I was completely stunned when it came through. I guess like a lot of people in the middle of a working day when I do a bit of work, suddenly could see all my phone blowing up and my WhatsApp was just going absolutely mad. And I was like, something's definitely gone down. I did say that this morning. It was a weird kind of basis that I was putting it all together on. And I was saying to you on the phone earlier during our impromptu phone call, I've gone on a long journey, I guess, like a lot of us, because after Shrewsbury last year, I'm sure you guys remember, that was it for me. I'd kind of hit my limit and was just like, the form, something has to change. Like, I think how some people will be feeling today about our form is how I felt last February, whenever that game was. But since then, it had come all the way back around because he had overseen, obviously, the great escape, and because of the amount of other credit that he has in the bank, which is absolutely enormous, right? The amount of standout moments that his teams have delivered over the last 3.5 years are some of the very best things that I've ever seen Cambridge United do in 25 years. and so many of them come in the last couple of years, that he had so much credit in the bank that my view was he actually probably deserved, through loyalty, to get us relegated. Like, if that was what was going to happen, as long as it wasn't completely like barren run of form, and it's certainly starting to look a bit like it could shape out that way, that he kind of deserved it. He had enough credit in the bank that he deserved the opportunity to take us to 46 games, whatever the outcome from that was. And genuinely, I was saying this 3 or 4 hours ago to you guys. I was like, in a weird way, I've come all the way through full circle. I also said to you guys, there's no way they'll do it today. It'll be months in the making. Literally, it was almost like I was mid-sentence and suddenly I was like, oh, no, yeah, he has gone, actually.
Swindle text me going, do you think we'll get a little heads up from someone just in case, you know, they might be nice to us, like to record an emergency pod? And I was like, yeah, I reckon so, you know, like I reckon one of them might. Nope.
Half an hour later and he's gone. I like what Matt said there, but I'm honestly not sure if I actually agree with that sentiment too much. Well, actually, I do, but I wonder if that credit that Mark Bonner had, a lot of it was used up in this scenario last season. You know, there's many people out there who said we won, you know, we won enough games last season to get us to the point where we were in the fight for the final game. This is true, but we rode our luck and we threw away a lot of points last season from positions where we could have won. And I think, you know, Mark Bonner, a fantastic job he's done bringing us up when we were relegation fodder, you know, for a lot of people is a fantastic thing. But we have to get the kind of sentimental stuff out of the way for a minute and think about the future of the football club. We've got so much positivity around the club in regards to things happening off the pitch. You think about the stadium, you think about the training ground, think about financial stability. We need to think about, you know, who can be the right person to take it forward. And when you see performances like we've seen this season and last season, and you see a manager who may at times have lost the dressing room, we hark back to the whole Rotherham scenario where, you know, he admitted he'd gone for an interview. You look at the turn of form after that. And I think if you look at this season, it can almost mirror how last season started. I think the club, you know, the people who make the decisions there probably don't want to see something like last season. It's a big risk from them, because if you look at, you know, towards the end of the season, if we're relegated by a more senior manager who's come in and it turns out the players are the ones who aren't up to it, and you know, then the club looks stupid. But that's the risk you run when running a football club. And I think, you know, Bonner, if we look at the transfer window coming up, if we look at it's before a cup game, this probably seems like a bit of a sensible decision from that point of view. Get someone in, get someone who's maybe got a bit more experience, who might attract a few more players, and you know, try and stem the tide of this pretty abject run.
It's almost, it feels a bit to me like it's a bit of a bigger thing than just this run of form. Because I think what Cass was saying is, first of all, I think everyone's having very different reactions to it in that sense that you talk about when you go on these different journeys. And I mean, I think any other football club in the country would have sacked Mark Bonner after we probably, yeah, the Shrewsbury game, Cheltenham, Barnsley, that it was like all in that little period of start of Feb sort of time. Any other football club in the country sacks him then. I suppose we repaid that loyalty that he showed us with the Rotherham situation. He kept us up. It was ultimately a success. It all worked out. Let's not talk about how it happened or why it happened. I think the question is this year, like last year, there was a lot of mitigating factors for that run of form. Maybe he'd been let down in the recruitment element in the summer. You talk about like Adam May's injury and the timing of that and the length and the severity of it. And then all the other injuries that sort of blighted the squad throughout the season. Like, you know, led to like Ben Warman playing centre mid for like a large chunk of that early start of the part of the season. It's a mitigating factor. Then, you know, we signed those players in January and we go into April and we put that run of form together that was came out of nowhere, but happened. Right, this year, I think what's a bit different is that the summer, like we've backed him in the summer with clearly some of these players are going to be on some pretty big wages. Like there's some players with pedigree in there, Ryan Bennett, Jordan Cousins, George Thomas. Lots of League One standard players. I think the squad's at the right standard compared to last season. And we don't have any injury crisis. And yet the form is the same as this time last season. I mean, if not worse, like some of the performances we've put in, especially look at the last three. I mean, really terrible. So I think the wider picture that the board might be looking at here, this is my reflection on it, is if they're going to show a level of ambition and investment into the infrastructure and the training ground and the football stadium and everything around the football club to grow Cambridge United to be a club that has 10,000 plus regular attendances, that considers League One to be their lowest level. Maybe this is in a decade. At some point, that also has to be matched on the pitch. And I think his post-match comments last night were a big factor in this. It's something we've spoken about for a long time, but the attitude of, maybe there's a realism to it, but I don't think that's an attitude you should publicly express as regularly as he did. So I think there's something in like the mindset that he's getting across to the players that it just felt like we'd got to the end of a chapter, didn't it? And that it's so heartbreaking to actually see it happen. And we'll talk about the good memories in a second, but as a bit of a summary, Casper, like given everything you said about the loyalty, for you, Luke and Huffy asked this question, both of them, even with the current run of poor form, did you actually see this coming? Like, did you physically see that they would, that corner flag picture would go up this morning?
I was shocked, mate. I'm telling you, honestly, messing you lads this morning, like there's no way, there's just no way. And all of my thinking over the last almost a year it's been since that Shrewsbury game has all been predicated around the fact that I just didn't think it would actually happen. Certainly not in this situation. They've been relatively ruthless. I think you would ask another set of people and they would disagree with you. But I think everything you've said there around the infrastructure is right. I also have a gut feeling without being too alarmist, but you feel like if we did drop into League Two and the attendance has dropped, you know, 4,000, 3,500, having the momentum, getting the planning permission, like getting the whole thing off the ground maybe gets much harder in terms of redeveloping the stadium. And I just think, I've said a few times on the pod, I think for the state of the redevelopment and the progress of the club, it's pretty much paramount. We have to stay in League One.
Yeah.
And to be clear with Bonds, it's the same thing I was trying to articulate this morning. I've still not worked out how to do it. I felt like he deserved to stay through loyalty, but I can see completely from a pure football perspective. My viewpoint wasn't built on the fact I think he's the right man and I really believe he will turn it around. Football's brutal though, isn't it? Last night, obviously I watched from home, and that's partly, to be honest, a symptom of where we are. Is I literally messaged you last Monday. I was like, I could go, but I'm not going to go. It's like a 3-hour trip up and down for me. It's not a small thing. So that's where I had got to. But when I say it's brutal, I actually thought the first 10 or 15 minutes we played all right. We looked quite lively. He'd moved people around. He'd tried something different. We had a good amount of energy. It's just how quickly we fell apart again, right? It's the story of time and time again. As soon as the game started to go a little bit against us, and I thought we were pretty unlucky not to get a penalty. And it's amazing. You look at these sliding doors moments of you get the penalty on a Habmi. Somehow, you know, we take the lead. We're a decent side once we're in the lead. We maybe contain them. We win 1-0. You're talking about turning a corner and have a cup game to go into with a bit of momentum. And maybe you win the cup game. You get a big draw and you've got something to be excited about. And January's coming and there's a transfer window. And it's fucking crazy what happens in football. Because to answer your question in short, like, completely shocked. I think I still am quite shocked, actually, by just seeing the news and then it actually just rolling over you over that period of like a couple of minutes of just almost disbelief.
Do you think it's right or wrong then, given everything you've said? Do you think right now, right this second, Wednesday the 29th of November, that was the right decision? I know time will tell, but for you, is it the right or wrong decision?
It's just head and heart, isn't it? Like football, yes. Any other manager's gone probably a while ago. Heart. It's hard, right? It's just like, just feels brutal. I don't think I ever would have been on board with it from one perspective. And I think everyone probably on this pod maybe feels in a similar way. It's like, same thing Tom was saying, anyway, just desperate for it to work for him. Actually desperate. Like, we'll never have another Cambridge United manager like this guy ever again in any of our lifetimes. And I think maybe, I don't know, it's easy to underestimate.
Yeah, it really is. Swinder, what about you? Right the second, right or wrong decision?
Yeah, it's brutal. Matt summed it up perfectly. It's properly brutal, but I think this is exactly the right time if you look at the timeline of where we are in the season and what's to come and transfer window and cup game, as I've mentioned already. I think, yes, I think it's horrible. And I think it's a horrible reactionary thing to say in a way, but the club is bigger than Mark Bonner.
Yeah.
And that's the top and bottom of it. And it's so sad to see, but that we need to remember that and we need to think about the bigger picture.
It's interesting as well with Bonner, something we're obviously talking about his spell in charge of the first team, which is the most important role in a football club. But this guy's been at Cambridge United for decades. And
yeah,
he's given so much to this football club. And that's sort of where I can see Caspel's loyalty argument or point or whatever you want to call it come into play, because there's a wider picture here, the head of the academy, how he's developed that from when we lost academy status and where we are now, developing players like McConnell who came on last night, and you look at just sort of that bigger picture of him and what he represents to this football club and this fan base. That's, you know, aside from the fact that this is a guy who lived the dream, right? He lived the Football Manager dream. He had a season ticket at 9 years old or whatever in the habit, and he was watching Roy McFarlane's team. I remember that thing on World Book Day where he posted a photo of something he'd drawn when he was 10 years old, and it said, like, what's your dream? And it said to be Cambridge United manager, and like a photo of him in like amber and black, a drawing of him in amber and black. Mm. And then like from 16 to start working for the club already at that age in the community groups, and to have that passion for not just the club, but for coaching, and then for it to work, like to get all the way to the most, to the top within the club, and then for it to work like it did. It's proper fairy tale stuff. And I think while I think it's the right time to end this particular chapter, it's what a chapter it's been. We'll go into it a bit more in a second, but wow.
100%. And I think that's the beauty of it. I mean it when I say it. I think quite a lot of people say this when a manager leaves a club. Oh, I hope this isn't the end of his involvement with the club. But I genuinely really hope that this isn't. I hope somewhere down the line, Bono can come in and still work the club, because this is a club that, you know, he lives and breathes. And this is, you know, you don't ever hear of this, you know, a person kind of coming up through the ranks, you know, incredible start. And he's been at the club, you know, during the really dark times, and he's seen it and, you know, come out the other side and brought us to a pretty incredible, you know, pinnacle. And then, you know, it dropped off, but he will be remembered as, you know, the most fondly out of any Cambridge United manager in our lifetime, no doubt.
An absolute legend he'll go down as. Just quickly back to the sort of the moment of the sacking, I think. Casper, do you think, you know, you could ask why now? And I think you make such a good point about the sliding doors moment with that pen, and like if that changes things, given obviously that 3-0 defeat last night, which we'll go into a little bit more detail on in the preview pod tomorrow, which we'll crack on as normal. Do you think this does make some sense? If you think about it, cup game coming up, it's a tricky December, but you've got a whole month for someone new to come in and assess a squad. And then you've got a whole month in January to build a bit of their squad. We're 4 points above the drop still. It's precarious, sure, but it's a competitive bottom end of the division there. It only takes a little run really to put a bit of daylight between yourselves and some of the chasing pack. Do you think it makes sense now?
Yeah, I think strictly logistically timing makes sense, right? As you say, got cup game in the weekend. That's not to write the cup game off. It's really important, but you're probably placing more stock in our league situation at the moment, and the form has obviously gone absolutely barren, to be honest. I think the one thing that was still going for us a few weeks ago before the Peterborough game was that we had the defensive records. It's like, look, we will grind out enough draws. There is enough going on here. That's obviously gone. Like over the last couple of games, it's just completely, we've lost the plot on that one as well. And I'm afraid that was probably the thing that's broken it. Logically, it makes sense. Like Fleetwood is a game we should be targeting and looking to win. And it is important. We always want to get to the third round of the FA Cup. But also we've got, you know, 9 or 10 days now until Charlton away, which all the league games are starting to feel a little bit bigger. And I don't, Tom Walker's not here, so I can't call that game a free hit. But you may look at that game and say, look, it's one of the bigger clubs. I know they're sort of bumped around mid-table for a while, but you might say, look, it's a little bit of a write-off for a new manager. It's not a game you're going to and saying, oh, we should be going there and winning. We're not really scoring away goals. So in a way, it's a bit of space and time. Even that fixture, you might look at and say, look, a little bit of time to get into the training ground, get to know the players and everything before we go into some of those bigger games over Christmas. We got, I think it's Exeter at home, and then we got Stevenage as well. Like, we've got some fairly important games for us around that festive period. They come thick and fast, and then we'll be into January before you know it. So that probably has factored into the decision-making. I mean, I like to think they're probably not as reactive as us, as like fans and a fan base. I would imagine the conversations have been going on for a period of time, and they've had some almost like, I mean, we're running a business here, so you would hope they've laid out some criteria, even maybe directly with Bonner, and said like, look, it needs to be this. Otherwise, it's this, if that makes sense. This could have been something they've been speaking about for a while. I know we're saying 78 days since the new contract, but I'm pretty confident that contract will have contained some you know, some break clausey needs, you need to be over this line, or some performance related stuff. So I like to think we will have thought through what we're doing here, and it isn't just they've all jumped on a phone call last night, which would have been the worst thing you could possibly do. Don't you can't make these decisions off the back of a game like that, or even this morning, because it would still be quite raw. My hope is that they've had a bit of a plan and a thought process around it all.
Kwame's asked Swindle, do you think they must have a decent replacement already lined up, and that's why it's happened now?
100%. I mean, if they don't name a manager within the week, I mean, preferably I'd hope they would be naming someone before the cup game, but that might be a little bit kind of head in the clouds from me. But I really hope they've kind of got the person waiting at the door to get them in, because otherwise, if we wait 2 or 3 weeks, it will seem a really kind of rash decision, whereas I think it must be quite measured. I think there will have been conversations, and like Haspel says, there will have been kind of contract stipulations he would have needed to meet. You know, let's get it straight. It's been a kind of disastrous last 3 games, and it's been a pretty rubbish last couple of months, and I think this will have been kind of simmering for a while. And, you know, given the benefit of the doubt, as we say, he gets the penalty, win the game last night, and maybe give him a few more games, but it's just not gone right this season, and we have to learn from experiences like last season. We have to, because we can't be going into May of 2024 being in the same position, because, you know, lightning doesn't strike twice, and we'd be on the wrong end of it. We'd be staring at League Two football and looking down again.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's probably that it's not just this little run of form, right? It's like, I think it was mentioned on the last pod that if you go do the 14-month form table, which is not the most common one, I appreciate that. But if you look at that from basically that Rotherham situation through to now, our points per game is like 0.8 or something. And if you do that over an actual season, you finish on about 39, 40 points. So you go down basically, you know, 9 times out of 10. So we've had, you know, that's been relegation form for the vast majority of that. And the good forms only come in such brief spells. I think this is the other thing that we've spoken about a couple of times on pods, is people who go to games week in, week out, whether that's just home games or home and away games, but people who regularly go and regularly engage with the performances and the level of performance. It's just because it's just come to a point for a lot of people where I can completely understand their frustration and just wanting something to be different. It's a completely natural reaction. So look, I think we're all probably in the same place that it does feel like the right moment, as heartbreaking as it is to say. We had this question in at Not Applicable, says, have any of you ever felt this way about a manager leaving us? I certainly haven't, although the Roy Mac era was a touch before my time. I think we've sort of covered that a little bit in, clearly we feel very different about Bonner leaving to any other manager, but let's talk about why. Let's talk about some of the memories. Matt says, can you include some Bonner appreciation moments, / stories? Let's also celebrate the man. And I think we should take a few moments to do that, because there have been so many. Boys, I hope you've prepared this. Tim and Martin have both asked, your favourite Bonner era moment. I'm going to give you three each. Let's each.
Thank God. Three. I was literally going to list. I have three that I was going to list out. Brilliant. So that's useful.
I was going to
go one personal, one sort of semi-football, and then one pure football, if that makes sense.
Okay, do that. Go on then. Do your three.
The football list could be massive, is the other thing we'll say. The personal one, obviously, don't talk about the Leighton Orient balcony that much, but I was there at that win. Don't know if you know, on an Airbnb balcony. Little bit of wheeling and dealing sorted that out. Not just Mark Bonner, the whole squad, to be honest, but certainly Mark Bonner. He took the time at the end of the game, which is obviously a pretty pulsating game, as I'm sure I can remember, because all we had to do was go and beat Harrogate, so we were sorted. He took a good amount of time to come over to us at the end of the game, just have a chat, have a bit of a laugh with it. Like, really likeable, personable. I don't think every football manager is going out their way to do that. It's not like he popped over for 20 seconds of just like, cheers, lads. Like, he stopped by for a good 5-minute chin wag about the season, about lockdown, about how it's all going, how the hell we got the balcony and all sorts. So just like, really classy operator, if you know what I mean. Semi-football, actually, I'll go football in between, because the semi-football is a bit of a laugh. Football related for me, it's going to be Newcastle away. Probably just stolen everyone's, maybe, but we got promoted as well, so there's loads to go around. Like, Newcastle away, if the conversations you're having after that game are, is that the greatest thing we have ever done as a football club? And is it the greatest thing you've ever seen us do as a football club? then it's absolutely enormous. We have a 100-year-old football club that we're talking about. It's not like, do you know what I mean? We're not MK Dons or anything like that. We've got a long, long history with a lot of things to choose from, including like knocking on the door of the Premiership, scoring at Highbury in the FA Cup quarterfinal. Like, this is a serious list of achievements that you are pulling up alongside in. And for me, Newcastle, richest club in the world at the time, their strongest 11 they had available. We didn't even have a full bench of players. Like, all of it is an absolute masterpiece, to be honest, and something that we will all be talking about for many years and decades to come. So that for me has to be like the standout football thing. But there are so many other footballing moments. And then the non-footballing side one is, you remember the little, this related to Newcastle, the little skit they put out. I think it was an ad for someone, I can't remember who, with Joe Ironside, just like,
oh, that
recreating
was brilliant.
This Newcastle goal.
Oh, that was brilliant.
Bonds' cameo in that, like, he's a natural born like entertainer in some sense, because the quality of his acting in that is way beyond what any football manager should be capable of turning out. It should just be really wooden and horrible, but he's an absolute natural. So he brings that skit completely to life. So
it's a shame his entertainment didn't quite translate to the football team in the past few weeks. No, that's a great shout.
They're probably the three, but I mean it when I say it. I could say it time and time again. 3.5 year period where he has created an entire like rostrum of memories that could go on and on and on. Probably more than, it's only Beck that I think you can even consider to put up at that kind of level. And I'm not qualified for that debate, so I'm going to leave it to someone else.
Yeah, completely agree. Let's Swindle, can I go next? Let's. I mean, I think that all of our footballing moments are going to be. It's got to be Newcastle, right? Like, I think everyone listening, it has to be that. But I would, let's just see if we can all, you know, let's see if we can come up with 9 sort of individual ones. So that one's sort of stolen there by Casper. I'll have a personal one first, which is definitely one that maybe not a lot of people will have unless it's part of the pod. But Bonner's willingness to come on this podcast and speak about not just football, but life and things in society. Like, he's been part of 2 special episodes. One that obviously went out last year, the mental health episode that we did. And then another one that goes out in a few days. Actually, it was supposed to go out today, but this is sort of trumped it a little bit. So that's going out in a couple of days. It's another special episode on another societal issue. I won't reveal what that is right this second, but it's just his willingness to go on these things and talk about issues which you shouldn't expect a football manager to do. And it's not their job. It's not what they have to do. But his commitment to creating a community football club and a club that's right at the centre of a community that he cares about and a city that he cares about, extending right through to like helping us out, whether it's doing a little chat here and there about our form, which I remember we did through lockdown a couple of times, all these things, these special pods which speak about wider issues that football can impact. And in the way he spoke, I mean, I know we spoke about the frustration about his presses recently, but I still think the guy, overall, one of his great strengths is his ability to speak to the media and his ability to be honest and really, really clever with his words. Granted, that's something that I think has maybe, you know, rattled, sort of grated on us a little bit over time. I'm well aware of that, but I think in general, it sort of like says a lot about the man. To join those sorts of pods and help us out and the community in general. So that's a personal one. The football one, obviously, like I said, Newcastle. I'll have Ipswich away though, which was just unreal. I mean, for something about also taking that amount of fans, I think we'd had a long debate about being the most we'd taken away to a league game since the last time we'd played Ipswich, and also won under Beck. I think someone might get me wrong, might correct me there, but I think that's correct. And to go there, win 1-0, Joey Ironside goal again, that late goal that got disallowed. Just one of those moments. And our Twitter, under the Abbey Stand Twitter cover photo, is still Bonner celebrating with the fans at the end. It's just this perfect snapshot of 2,000 United fans and Bonner just with his hand in the air. It's such an amazing moment. And over the context of the end of that season where we were sort of comfortably cruising to mid-table when no one had expected us to, and it was surrounded by like beating Wimbledon and Wigan, and just an amazing time to be a United fan. So that's my football one. And my sort of non-football one has absolutely got to be Tom Walker missing Ironside's goal at Newcastle, which is something that, a moment he's given us that I'm so pleased exists because it's something.
Wait, you're giving Bonds.
I'm giving Bonds credit for Tom being at the bar when Ironside scored that goal. So that's my non-footballing one. Swindle, what are yours?
Well, yeah, I think I'll piggyback on the back of that, and it's a similar situation, but it's Posh at home. Stood in the bar just before half time with Tom Walker and hearing this huge roar and both of us running round back to the pitch like there's going to be a replay or something. I don't know why we're both running away when we know we've missed the goal, but just absolute carnage for that, which was a fantastic memory. A kind of semi-football one, which is a bit of a kind of left-field one. Mark Bonner had to wait 6 months for his first game in charge as full first team coach, and I think that must have been quite a nervous wait given everything that was going on in the world, COVID, and it was just an amazing day. It was actually a League Cup game against Birmingham, and the hero is Robbie Cundy, I think, scored the winner. But just being back together with like all your mates, and we kind of all got together, and socially distancing and all that, but we all got together, watched the game, and it was just a kind of feeling of like having that feeling back. And you know, Bonner was the man in charge for that, and that kind of set the precedent for how the team went out. And we were kind of like we really went for it, and there was a real feeling of kind of like freedom that I hadn't felt with Cambridge United for such a long time. And you know, that was such a kind of great way to get back into football. I mean, the game itself was a bit of a non-event, but it was just fantastic to be all back together, and I think it was a really nice kind of moment. And I think the footballing moment I think football is so beautiful because you can go from feeling, you know, so horrendous in the pit of your stomach to just feeling the most incredible ecstasy. And I think that Forest Green game on the last day of the season, all of us pacing up and down, everyone on their phones, no one able to get signal. I think the beauty of that day and the beauty of that feeling at full time, and then being with Bonner and the players on the pitch, and just him coming out and getting all the players, you know, off the pitch, he kind of shouting at them, and then doing that speech at the end. That was a really emotional moment, I think, for everybody who was lucky enough to be there and witness it. And
I don't know what you're on about, mate.
Yeah. I hear America's nice that time of year. But yeah, it was just an incredible moment. Amazing. He spoke with such kind of, you know, grace, and, you know, he's always been such a modest man. So like that moment for me was just, you know, kind of icing on the cake of what was an absolute shite season.
Yeah, yeah. And like, you know, you talk about the first game of that lockdown season, but then, you know, we haven't mentioned the last game, getting over the line against Grimsby. Tim's suggestion, who sent the question in, said dancing on the turnstiles for me. Another amazing moment. Just so many to go through, you know, like Wigan away, Pompey away. I think some of those games where you, even just like the first game in League One, like just a whole, like just to experience that and be back in the ground. I was talking about that Oxford game, like despite it being a bit of a nothing game to remember, but just to be watching us in League One again and having people like Sheffield Wednesday come to us. And it's all because of him and his and the work that he did in that time. Okay, let's talk about some players. I hope you've both prepared this as well, because if not, this is going to be interesting. Ed's asked your favourite Mark Bonner 11.
I just rattled through it, mate. I was like, God,
this is tough though. I've
had to put some square pegs in round holes for sure. Okay.
All right, yeah. I've ended up with a very attacking team, which is actually kind of weird considering who we're talking about.
Really?
Okay, let's start in goal. I think this one's fairly obvious, is it?
I've got me, Tom, obviously.
Callum Burton.
Yeah. You've gone Burton.
No, I've gone me.
you've gone Thomas Holy.
Yeah.
Well,
me, Tom, 4-3.
Yes, go on then. Just over Holy.
Yeah. Right back.
I've gone Carl Noyle.
I've gone Carl Noyle as well. Right, okay.
All right. This is quite easy. Yeah.
This is easy.
It's got to be a big shout for George Williams there, just even for that season. But
the Brigadier, the long throw specialist.
People could have Liam Bennett in there, but I think it's a bit too raw at the moment, some of the performances, to get him in a team like this. But left back, one answer here, surely.
Yeah. Brandon Hounstra.
I've got Iredale. What's your one answer?
Ah, see, I've got Dunk, but that's because I'm putting Iredale elsewhere. So I've got Dunk at left back. Swindle, okay. Who have you got?
I've gone for Dunk. I'm interested to hear where you got Iredale.
Wait, Swindle's definitely making this up on the spot. So we get 100%. Him? Can we get him to do his centre midfield first?
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. We need centre backs first, surely.
Yeah, two centre backs. All right. Who are yours then?
I think I didn't prepare for this. You know, I'm in the middle of the working day. But Greg Taylor's going in there from a bit of sentimentality from my point of view.
I've got Taylor as well. You got Taylor, Castle?
Yeah, I got him. Yeah, it's a strike.
Are we playing a 4-4-2? That's what I need.
That's up to you, mate. My formation's batshit. It's all over the shop.
Right.
I'm playing 4-4-2.
Okay. I mean, I'm struggling. There's quite a few choices for another centre back.
He's flapping here.
I am flapping a little bit. I mean, please enlighten me.
What about Lloyd Jones? Eh?
Well, I
think Jones is fair. But by the way, I'm having Ardell at centre back. That's where he played against Newcastle.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
he played a lot of that season there. I think he was a brilliant player for us. And maybe square peg, round hole, but I'm having Ardell centre back. So I've got Noyle Taylor, Ardell, Dunk. What a terrible back four.
Yes. I don't mind that, though.
It's all good, mate.
So you're just going to copy me and go Ardell because you can't agree?
No, I'm not going to go Ardell. No, absolutely not. I don't want to go Lloyd Jones either.
I can see the reflection in your glasses. What are you looking at?
Cambridge United players 21-22.
I've been found out a little bit here, but yeah, I'm just trying to think. I mean, anyway, carry on with the teams. You can come back to me.
Okay, all right. Centre mids. Actually, I would think centre mids might be fairly locked in. There's one.
I don't know about that.
Okay, well, there's one that everyone's got to have, right?
Where's Houlihan? Would Swindle have got that? I don't know.
That's very funny, mate.
Go on, who's your other centre mid, Casper? Or have you got, are you playing?
I've got like a double pivot. This is where it all goes a bit messy. Okay.
Go on.
Bonds would want a double pivot.
He would.
So very clear about that. It's what he would have wanted. I've got Digby and I've got the boat.
Yeah, fair. So I was trying to get the boat in, but he ended up on my bench. So I've got Digby as well.
We're not doing benches as well, are we?
No, definitely not.
Swindle's got work to do,
I can't name that many players. I mean, Digby's an obvious choice for me because I was the one who stood by him last season.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Okay, so you think of the rest of yours while me and Casper do
that.
Right.
Yeah.
I've got two wingers, Casper, that are sort of probably not wingers, but...
Same.
I've got Sam Smith on one wing.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Mate, I think he single-handedly kept us up last year. I don't know how he's not... He's got to get in here somehow.
I've got no Nibs, no Smith.
I've got Nibs. About Nibs is such a Bonner guy. Like, I think in a Bonner 11, I'm definitely having Nibs. Go on, who else have you got?
I mean, my formation's a mess. So I've got Dunk on the left, which I think is fine.
Okay, that's fine.
It's a winger for me. I guess I've got Mullen on the right.
Right, okay.
Because,
So you're doing like Digby and Boat with Wes just in front and then Mullen on the right, Dunk on the left.
Yeah. Basically, right. I'm trying to contain the opposition as much as possible.
Play on the break.
Because my game plan is to not score.
Let them have the ball.
And let them have the ball and just hold on.
So I've got Smith on the right, Nibs on the left, and then Wes and Digby in the middle. It's as attacking a 4-4-2.
That is you're mental.
You're going to get Swindle, your midfield.
I'm a bit confused. I'm kind of jumping the gun a little bit, but I feel like...
Right, I'll tell you, I've got Mullen and Ironside up top.
You
have got Mullen. I thought you were going to go for... No. You weren't going to go for Mullen
and Ironside. No, Mullen and Ironside are they're the two sort of absolute must-haves. I mean, there's a lot of crossover in all our teams here. So any advances on those midfield positions?
I want to get Adam May in there.
I don't mind it. I don't mind.
Yeah, I really want to get Adam May in there. And I'm struggling. Nibs isn't going in my team. So I think I will...
I'll tell you what we should do. You should play a diamond like we did the year came up. With Digby at the base of it. Wes on one side.
May on the
other. And then Smith or Mullen just behind Ironside or the other one.
You can do my team for me. Go to the football for more than just the football, man.
Okay, out of them, who do you think, this is a question from Mark, who was the most important signing we made under Bonner?
It's got to be Wes.
Wes?
Wes.
I might go Paul Mullen, mate.
Yeah, I would say Mullen over Wes.
35 goals, gets promoted.
Fucking mental, isn't it? He's pumping that book out at the moment, and I think it was with fairly good reason. That's like a mental season.
Yeah. Let's not get into Paul Mullen.
No.
That's a whole other thing. Let's get back to Bonner. Okay, so we've sort of spoken about some of those memories and the good times, and I think it's worth sort of wrapping up before we go on to next steps just by saying, like, Mark Bonner's going to go down as an absolute legend of this football club, and I hope that's not the last time that we see him in some capacity at the Abbey or involved in Cambridge United, whatever that might be. Or if that isn't the case, I hope he goes on to have as fantastic a career as he deserves elsewhere, wherever that might be. And I think every single Cambridge United fan will be feeling slightly confused this morning by thinking this is probably the right thing to do, but to actually see it is shocking and fairly heartbreaking and something that I don't think we ever thought we'd see. But look, that's the brutal nature of this game that we love. Next steps.
Why do I see the word Sean Derry twice on this page on the running order? That is not the next step. That's not
Matt's,
it.
Matt Gooding, friend of the pod, has asked, last time we fired a promotion winning manager, we turned to a Premier League legend and proper football man to revive our fortunes. So are you guys excited for the second coming of Sean Derry?
The best thing he did was call that Bristol Rovers fan a bag of shite. That was literally the best thing he did.
Let's next manager thoughts. Gaspel, profile-wise, what sort of person are you wanting in?
I guess if we buy the timing of when this has all gone down and we believe it's been a planned, thought-through sort of exercise, and the absolute goal that I think everyone can agree is we have to stay in League One, and possibly not just this year, but also without filling anyone's minds with a powerful sense of dread too much. Next season, League One is going to be very hard, right? I'm not even worried about this season. It's going to be hard. Next season, get Wrexham and Stockport and maybe Notts County coming into League One. It's going to be a serious test for not just us, but our entire little mini division, as obviously we like to call it. So I think this needs to be obviously staying in League One is paramount. It needs to be influencing who they're looking at. I do think we will probably go in a slightly different direction in profile terms, someone with a bit more experience, someone a little bit who's maybe, you know, overseen a bit more football in their time. I think we were talking about it before, because the nature of our squad has changed from being a bit more youthful with a little bit less experience, sort of people who'd kind of fallen out of a few other clubs, like Jack Iredale's a really good example of someone who it probably felt like when he came to Cambridge in League Two that if it didn't really work out for him, he was maybe going to drop out of the pyramid, if that makes sense. We had quite a few players who met that profile.
Paul Mullen.
Mullen is probably another example of somebody who's sort of done okay and jobbed about and scored a handful of goals at other clubs in a given season. And obviously, let's not talk about him anymore, but yeah, he's doing really well, I'm told. I just think the profile of our squad changed a lot, and it all started last January. And I think it all comes back to your point, Jules, about the investment that was made. I think it kind of, yes, we talk about the infrastructure, but it was very clear last January, our season had gone off the rails, is not even an unfair description. And we had to open up the checkbook and at that point make an investment. And I think a bit of a hangover from that has kind of come through into this season, where the amount of patience has just been a lot shorter. And now the profile of a squad we got is more senior professionals who've played at, you know, League One, Championship, even some Premiership appearances. And I just think maybe a lot of Bonner's strengths are like man management and having this really well galvanized squad, you know, together during COVID. I think we needed to adapt and evolve, right? So now I think we need someone. No, it'll sound too hard. I can't say about Bonner. I was going to say someone with more gravitas, but it's completely unfair to Mark Bonner, because I think for me personally, he's a very commanding person who warrants a huge amount of respect, right? But I think maybe the viewpoint from, I don't know, with having these senior professionals in the changing room is that we need someone with more experience or more credentials, which is so wank, because there are so many shit football managers out there who have got 20 years experience but are rubbish, right? But I have a sense that maybe more of the profile of the sort of person they're looking for. And that would probably be the main difference, without going to any names.
Yeah, fair. A bit of pedigree, maybe. Swindle, do you agree? I mean, we had a bunch of questions.
Yeah.
Charlie and Josh and a load of others. Who do you want to replace Bonner, and what's the plan now? Do you agree with Casper there? Like someone with a bit more profile pedigree?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, Bonner's an incredibly great manager at nurturing players and, you know, eking that talent out of players that he knows is there, but maybe they haven't been showing in their career or certainly in recent times. And that's fantastic. But I think we need someone who's a little bit more savage. And I don't mean that with any disrespect to Mark Bonner, but I think a football manager with a bit more experience who's been through a few teams and had to be a bit more cutthroat with including players and stuff might actually be good for the position we're in at the moment. You know, not carrying any passengers, that kind of thing. So I think it's really, you know, it's a really careful appointment that's needed. And I think someone with Football League experience across a few clubs will benefit. As there's loads of names being bandied about. It's extremely early to talk about it, but a lot of the names that are kind of shorter odds are people who've got experience in the Championship and League One and have managed quite a few teams and got a lot of games under their belts. And I think, like you say, when the more experienced players came in, Mark Bonner had never been in that position before where he's had to manage, you know, other than Greg Taylor and Harrison Dunk, really, who've been, you know, in the winters of their careers, you know, he's not really had that. And, you know, taking those players on is a different challenge. And maybe that, you know, was where things became slightly unstuck. So I think it's a really careful choice that the club have to make. And hopefully they go for one of these experienced managers and, you know, and they're not left with the egg on their face. But yeah. I'm a big fan of someone more experienced coming in and seeing how they take on the challenge.
I suppose you've got Wes as well, obviously, in winters of their career, but like very different profile of player to someone like a Ryan Bennett or a Cousins, who's a bit more commanding presence and something a bit on the pitch. I mean, is a bit of a different sort of thing. But let's chuck a few names out there just because why not? But let's do it via the very early booking bookmakers odds. Matt says, I'm not even going to read his question yet. Let's just go through them quickly. Okay. At the time of recording, Danny Cowley's 4-1. Steve Cotterill's 5-1. Neil Harris, Gareth Ainsworth, both 8-1. Liam Richardson, 10-1. Carl Robinson, 10-1. Some good names in there. I mean, almost all of them fit that bill. Whether they're realistic or not is besides the point. I'd love to think we could get a Robinson or an Ainsworth or a Cowley. I think that's the sort of standard we should be looking at. I mean, let's be clear.
No, but if you go, so now I've just loaded up the next Rotherham manager, right?
Yeah.
It's basically the same bunch of blokes in a slightly different order.
Yeah, like, that's what I was going to say. So generic.
It's not, they've literally copy and pasted this stuff, move a few people around. To be fair, Steve Evans is on Rotherham's hit list. He's not on ours.
He's not on ours.
God.
Makes sense. Hasselbank. It's
crazy. Like Barry Corr's 16-1. Matty Taylor at 14s, like he's an interesting profile, similar to Bonner.
I personally hope it's not Barry Corr from the point of view of everything we've just mentioned. Like, I think we need to get an experienced manager in there and someone who's got, you know, first team experience at this level. And if it was a Barry Corr, I'd fully support him, of course, but it would feel a little bit like a kind of carbon copy of where we've just been. And is that what we really need at the moment? I mean,
yeah.
On a personal note, I'd go for Gareth Ainsworth, you know, a fellow rock star. I think that'd be quite cool to have him. And he genuinely seems to be, you know, have his head. It's not gone too well in recent times for him, but I think it'd be a good acquisition. But I think all of those names, you know, it's lower league, isn't it? This is how manager odds work. They just kind of copy and paste and then
fellow long haired freaks, man.
Yeah. If we get Ainsworth, can you start wearing the big, like, with the deep V shirt?
Yeah, with the leather jacket. No one wants to see that.
Can you please start
belly hanging out?
Just start dressing as Gareth Ainsworth for all the games. It'd be
a few other interesting ones in here. Jimmy Unwin's 20-1. Same odds as Chris Wilder. Two very, very different profiles. John Eustace, Neil Lennon. Like, what? That seems a massive step too far.
Where's Calderwood?
Calderwood isn't on this list, but I tell you who is on this list. Speaking of ex-managers, Sean Derry, 20-1. What are you doing here?
I mean, his previous team, the last team he managed was us.
Yeah.
That's what it says here.
He's not Wolves? Where is he now? Is it Wolves, I think, isn't he? Isn't he on the staff at Wolves, I think?
I don't know, man.
Pete Wilde, Paul Tisdale. Anyway, look, this is complete conjecture. I think we've made the point about the sort of person that the three of us at least would like. And I would be surprised if we didn't go for that sort of profile. I also think they probably have had conversations with someone already. So I think we'll see someone maybe not take over by the weekend, maybe be announced before the weekend, but still Barry Corr taking charge of that game and then sort of get to work next week potentially. But that is complete conjecture. Let's end on this question, which Thomas sent in, which I think is quite interesting. Casper, if a new person comes in and we still get relegated, would this decision be seen as a mistake? Would you have Bonner back in that instance?
Ooh, I hadn't seen that.
Brilliant. Now who hasn't prepped?
Well, it's like Swindle trying to conjure up a starting 11.
Well, I've got an answer.
It's not going to be that painful, is it?
Who's prepped this one?
I would say, if we still get relegated, then the appointment is a mistake. This is kind of divorcing. I'm stepping the question completely here. The appointment is obviously a mistake because the goal is literally one objective, which is to stay in League One. And for me, it'd be a massive shame, right? I think probably for everyone, not just me, actually, if we sack Mark Bonner now and we do not stay in League One, then for me, it has all been like completely in vain. And we should have repaid the loyalty that he paid us and all the credit he has in the bank. And we should have stuck with it because it's weird, isn't it? Almost the end of his question, like, would you have Bonner back? I don't think that would happen, but then I didn't think he would get sacked. And I said that at 8 o'clock this morning. So I know nothing.
Well, by 8 o'clock this evening, he'll be back in charge.
They're just messing with us. Yeah. So it's sort of, yes, I would have him back, but I don't think that would happen. I guess what I'm trying to say is if we end up in League Two next season, Mark Bonner would be my preferred choice as manager at that point. And therefore, it's fairly disingenuous of me to say that I think he should be gone now, if that makes sense. But if we stay in League One, the thing I don't like that I see on the message board and sometimes on the socials is this suggestion that by not sacking Bonner, we are just completely inactive. Like we're just choosing to not act. Like not sacking a manager is not inaction. It is a positive form of action. Like you are choosing to stay with your man because you believe that he will keep you in the division or achieve whatever you're trying to achieve. So I think I don't like this narrative that by sacking him, if we hire someone that the implication would be that we wouldn't have stayed in League One with Mark Bonner. And you might feel that. And right now I definitely feel that way because we've just been kicked around since the clock's changed. It's all gone to shit again. But it's going to be frustrating. Obviously I want us to stay in League One, but there's going to be that little tiny bit of frustration where people are saying he definitely would have got us relegated. We would not have stayed in the division with him. And that's my issue with what's going to happen to his legacy, right? Is that we're in this weird spot where I definitely want us to stay in League One, but it's like, I don't know, justice for Bonds if we don't, I guess.
Mm.
This is completely frying my brain. Like, I love the question, love all the questions, but like, what are we supposed to do? Not ever do anything, like, on the fact that we might not succeed? Like, it's basically like asking, should we not make any signings in January in case we get relegated? Like, you have to change things when things are going badly. And I think if we get relegated, it will be because the person who's come hasn't been able to get the best out of a group of players. We haven't made the right signings in January. But, yeah, you know, hindsight is fantastic. But the thing about hindsight is you can't have it until you get to the point where you're having the hindsight about. Like,
As a famous philosopher once said.
Was that at Accidental Partridge?
But come on, like, yeah, I think
I suppose the answer to the question is there's a difference between the sacking of Mark Bonner and the appointment of whoever else, right? And like, yeah, we're very much in a position where we can stay in this division, and it looked like Mark Bonner wasn't going to do that, so there has been some activity in sacking him and putting your eggs in the basket that whoever we appoint next is going to keep us in this division. Now, if they don't keep us in this division, then that appointment was wrong. It doesn't mean that sacking Bonner was wrong.
No, it's the butterfly effect. And like, so people who are really gutted today and are looking for a kind of outlet can turn around in May and say, oh, well, I told you so. Sacking Mark Bonner was the wrong decision. Look at us, we got relegated. But that's how football works. You know, like you said, an appointment's one thing, a sacking's another. And the 30 games between now and then is an absolute other thing as well. So there's plenty of the season to go, and we will be relegated because of what happens between now and then and what's gone before. But, you know, Mark Bonner being sacked from the club is a very sad thing to see. But I think we need to kind of now look forward and, you know, not dwell on the fact we might get relegated in 30 games time.
I think that's a pretty good place to finish, I suppose. From the three of us, I mean, he's not going to be listening to this. Thanks, Mark.
He might.
He actually might.
He might. And obviously, Swindle was there in August saying all he wanted was £100 a week.
That's where he went wrong.
I'm talking about that had me maybe a penalty, maybe not. But I'm sure if he listens or not, he will reflect on that moment, Swindle, and he will say what might have been, eh?
Well, I'm still a free agent.
In every sense.
Get on the phone to Carl Robinson, mate. all right, boys, look, I guess, yeah, without being too heartfelt, big thank you to Mark Bonner for everything, but we move forward. There's another pod tomorrow where there'll be some more reflection on this situation. It's a bit TBC who's on that at the moment, but you'll have two of the UTAS crew on that tomorrow, and then Sunday, of course, with the review show after the cup game. And I'm sure we'll probably put out a little special when there's a new manager announced, just to react to that news as well. So you'll have plenty of UTAS over the coming weeks. Casper, thank you very much for giving us your energy and your emotion on this tumultuous morning.
It's a sad day, mate.
It's a sad day. He hasn't died. Come on, it's not.
Yeah.
It's a shame, but he hasn't.
It's a bit sad, though, isn't it?
It is, of course it's sad. Swindle, thank you as well.
Yeah, thanks very much, mate.